Welcome to Life Quest Liberty, live in-depth conversations with today's top writers, editors, and spiritual leaders concerning religious freedom around the world. On today's broadcast, we'll examine local and international factors that may be impacting your right to worship and obey God as your conscience dictates. I'm your Life Quest Liberty host, Charles Mills. The Bible suggests strongly that we can't serve both God and man. Yet Christ commands us to render to Caesar, man or society, the things that are Caesar's, and unto God what's God's. But what happens when those two renders collide? Lincoln Steed, editor of Liberty Magazine, is with us today to share some suggestions. Lincoln, what's on your heart?
Well, these two aspects of our loyalty or existence can be, if not in conflict, at work at the same time.
Yes.
It's worth remembering that Paul, who suffered a lot of persecution and imprisonment, when it suited him, he claimed his citizenship in the Roman Empire.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And ironically, him claiming that citizenship and the appeal that went with it guaranteed his continuing imprisonment and final appearance before the emperor, and we're not clear when, but probably at a later point, that led to his death.
Yeah.
So he knew that there was a conflict, and ironically, it was Paul who wrote, and is often quoted by those wanting to support the state, that the rulers or the civil authorities exercise not the sword in vain.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, that's been used by many people and many Christians through the eras to enable the state doing something that's wrong, even persecution. There's no question that when the Duke of Savoy was persecuting the Waldenses, that was quoted the same way, that he was being a good Christian ruler by cleansing the doctrinal situation.
Yes.
We know, looking back on it, that he was acting in a very satanic and violent way toward people of faith. So you need to be a little bit careful of just invoking, well, the powers are there to uphold the righteous, and if you're doing well, you don't have to worry. We all know it's not quite that simple.
You know, when you make a statement like you want to call this program a clash of loyalties that clash, what are some of the ways that loyalties can clash? And when that happens, what standard are we supposed to use to decide which loyalty we're going to follow?
Let's go further back in the Bible. The three worthies, they're called, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego,
standing
on the plain of Dura, they were employees of the state. That's why they were there.
Yes.
And here, King Nebuchadnezzar erected a monument to his power and his gods, as he said it, asked them to kneel to it, and they wouldn't. But yet they were employees.
Yeah.
You know, our country's no different from others. It requires a certain loyalty from those that it employs. But yet when it asks, as Nebuchadnezzar did, something inappropriate, a good Christian must refuse.
Yeah. And that brings up an interesting point because, you know, you and I, as Seventh-day Adventists, we have a set of loyalties that we will not go beyond, even though the government or the state or the civil authorities say we need to. Well, what if there is someone else, our neighbor, who is of a different religion and has a whole different set of loyalties, and he or she doesn't want to go beyond those, even though the government that we like and we obey says that's fine? How are we supposed to accept the fact that there are religions other than Christian in this country whose loyalties are going to be different from ours and also at odds with the government?
Well, I hope none of them are at odds with the government because they don't like what the government stands for. That's a different question.
Right.
But in pursuing their faith, if that or ours or any government tries to mandate to them how they practice their faith or prevent them from practicing it the way that they're conscience-bound to, then it's out of line.
Okay.
This principle is understood still to some degree in ours and most Western jurisprudence. Where it gets a bit tricky, and it's worth mentioning, is in the Smith case, the Peyote case of a few decades ago, where there was a law that forbade the sweat lodge ceremonies to use peyote, a hallucinogenic substance, was part of their history and their tradition. And, of course, we have anti-drug laws. and it was upheld by the Supreme Court that said, well, it's not an anti-religious law, it's a law of neutral applicability, a neutral intent, so we're not restricting religion purposely.
Okay, all right.
So you've got to be a little bit careful about that, particularly knowing how judges or judiciary and politicians can often work, just like those clever men that came to the king trying to get rid of Daniel. You know, let's have a law that they just worship you for a month. Yeah. They were after Daniel.
Yes, yes.
They gave a law that seemed to have a general applicability. And so it's not that hard to construct something that could entangle a certain group with a particular form of religious practice. So, yeah, the judges need to be on the lookout, or our judicial system, in checking what might be legislated, needs to be on the lookout that there might not be some bias at work. You know, we had the most grand example of that at the federal government level when there was a so-called Muslim ban.
Yes.
And, you know, we don't need to get into the president or any of his advisors' hearts to know that on the face of it, it clearly had a religious nature. But they were passing it off as a security issue with an unquestioned problem we have from a certain part of the world. Mm-hmm. But that very easily sort of morphed into a generally prejudicial action against all that have such a faith.
Lincoln, you mentioned the judges of this country of ours and how important it is that they fully understand what we're talking about on this program and what you have in the magazine. And you recently received a letter from a judge in this country that I think indicates that what you're saying and what we're saying on this show and what you're saying in the magazine is on the right track for any judge who really knows not only the situation of this country, but knows the heart of this country and knows what the framers had in mind and what the Constitution is. Would you share with us that letter that judge wrote to you? Give us a little background about why that person wrote and then read the letter to us.
It's not uncommon for me to get letters from judges because our mailing list for Liberty is quite large.
Yes.
It covers legislators, state and federal level, judiciary, lawyers and mayors and so on. Yeah. But a lot of judges read it, and on occasion, sort of periodically, they'll write to me, and I can't really remember a negative comment from a judge. Mm. But this one I got the other day is very positive, and I liked it because he was writing about my editorial, which is more me than anything else in
yes,
the magazine.
Absolutely.
Well, this is what he wrote, and he was responding to an editorial that I wrote called The Sound of Rain, where I mused a bit on what I saw as the subtext of the Kavanaugh confirmation hearings. It was very troubling to me. So this is what he wrote to me. He says, "Mr. Steed, I am a cradle Catholic and still a regular believer and churchgoer. I think your organization sends me Liberty Magazine because I'm a judge in a busy court in upstate New York." That's true. He says, "Thank you for that, by the way. I am not in the regular habit of corresponding with magazine editors. I am doing so now because I want you to know how moving and perceptive I found your editorial, The Sound of Rain. I, too, was troubled by the tone and meaning of the Kavanaugh hearings, but I think that your article puts its finger on the source of the problem. We have become a nation that remains puritanical and highly judgmental, but we have stripped out all of the Christianity in our process of reasoning. I think a large number of Catholics as well as Protestants have stopped being Christian believers in any meaningful way. Thank you for helping me to understand this world we have created. I found your editorial profound, which is not a word I use lightly."
My.
So obviously, you know, I'm polishing my buttons on that one, but it's nice to get that sort of feedback.
Well, I mean, and you and I talked a little bit about that letter, and I think I put my finger on why that judge and why other judges and why so many readers find this magazine and this radio program and your commentary in both so appealing, in that you are really bypassing religious dogma, you're bypassing religious structure and going to the very heart of religion, and that is its spiritual nature, its spirituality. Would you think I'm on the right track saying that?
The worst abuses I see of religion are precisely because of that. Their religious structure and activity and prejudice and all the rest, but precious little, if any, true personal spirituality
yeah.
and, And you could also say humanity.
Yeah.
Because good and correct spirituality leads to a sense of humanity, as Jesus said. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, and your neighbor as yourself.
Yes, yes.
If you're a true Christian, you will have love for your neighbor.
And that wraps right around to our theme of this program, A Clash of Loyalties. Our loyalties, your loyalty, my loyalty, should not be built on a religious structure, but on the spiritual heartbeat of any religion. Am I on the right track saying that?
Right.
Yeah.
And we need to think about our obligation to God first. You know, many of the Nazis that were brought before in the Nuremberg court, they portrayed themselves as good, moral,
yes,
upright. Some even said they were Christians,
yeah,
people who were just following orders. But if you're given unchristian, unhuman orders, you're under no moral obligation to obey them. That's when it's not that you cut loose from the state, but you draw even closer to the moral absolutes and to the worship of God that you've committed to. And it's that level that the state has no power. It might make claims. You know, a Sunday law is basically that sort of a claim. It's a vestige of a time, especially in England, when, you know, the state thought it could pass religious laws to make the society more moral.
Right,
but
right.
Modern states sort of know that it doesn't work that way. But every now and again, they slip up. By the way, there's a good quote from George Washington. And we've actually featured it in Liberty before. He says, "Every man who conducts himself as a good citizen is accountable alone to God for his religious faith and should be protected in worshiping God according to the dictates of his own conscience." So good citizens, not incompatible with good religionists, but it's a separate thing. They're responsible to God alone, not to the state, how good a Christian in this case or Buddhist or whatever they might be. Not the state's business.
Yes.
What spiritual inclination you have.
And you know, there is no better illustration of what we've been talking about here, clash of loyalties, than what took place on a hillside outside of Jerusalem about 2,000 years ago, when Christ, because of his loyalties, not to a nation, not to a religion, but to people, to you and me, faced the government, faced the civil authorities, and allowed himself to be crucified because his loyalties for us eclipsed all other loyalties in that man. What a wonderful example we have in Jesus. My, my, my. Lincoln, this has been an eye-opening conversation, and I appreciate your words of wisdom on this. Thank you so much.
Always a pleasure.
Until next time, this is Charles Mills, along with Lincoln Steed, editor, inviting you to rest in the freedom of God's love. Goodbye, everyone. If you'd like more information about LifeQuest Liberty, call 443-391-7258 or email us through our website at libertymagazine.org. Join us again next week at this same time as we examine more of the threats and challenges facing your religious freedom. May God keep the flames of liberty burning in your heart today.